the fans, by the fans, welcome to the Non-League Football Show. I am Tim Fuel, back in the caretaker role for another week in Non-League Football. And it is quite a week too. Joining me by the powers of the internet, I hope, is Show Stallwood and the voice of FC United Radio, Swampy. Good afternoon, Swampy.
Good afternoon, Tim. How are you?
Hey, stressed, but hey, it's Thursday. I can see the weekend on the horizon and a trip to Ashford Town, Middlesex. You know, I know how to enjoy my life. And non-league keeps us ticking along. So at least you know the weekend's upon us, as is the autumn. You know, autumn leaves are here and fans in particular begin to take much more notice of the tables. And in the right spot of Christmas, and the season could be a golden one. Perhaps that's the thinking behind our first guest's latest two new signings. Kingsland Town manager Ian Culverhouse has a long association with Norwich City. But even that didn't mean the announcement of former Canaries Simon Lapping and Grant Holt didn't come as a surprise to pretty much everybody in non-league football. Hopefully Ian can tell us a bit more about it all came about. Good afternoon, Ian.
Hello, chaps. How are you?
Well, I've told you how I am. You know,
Swampy's
buzzing. Swampy's having a better week than me. And I guess you are as well. I mean, I'm guessing these you've known these two lads for a long while, but even so, to pull them in, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it just shows the character of the pair of them. That they're prepared to come down. They're not come down just to pick up the money and just see it out. They want to get involved. They want to be involved on the training pitch and get involved in the coaching side of things and really help the football club try and progress and compete in a really, really difficult league.
So what are their fitness levels like? Have they been keeping themselves ticking along?
Yeah, they have. They're both in good nick. We're introducing them slowly to match fitness. That's what they're missing mostly. I mean, I know Simon's been out with a while with an Achilles injury, and Grant has been himself ticking over, but it's nothing more. You can't get replicate the match fitness, that's for sure. So we'll introduce them slowly, and then they'll be up to speed when the season really kicks in.
So how did it all come about? Was it just a case that you could bring them in, or were you looking to, you know, really strengthen and go for it ahead of Christmas?
Well, no, it's a dialogue I've been having for a while with the pair of them. Simon had to, was in halfway through his rehabilitation on his Achilles injury. And Grant just wanted to see what offers were available to him, you know, from the league and then leagues above. But, I mean, they both sat down with their families and said, this is a great opportunity to come and coach and carry on playing. And really give something back to the county, really, of Norfolk and the local football team.
And they've, you're already getting involved, and that really did boost your crowd on Tuesday night, didn't it?
Yeah, which kept the chairman happy, because he was hoping that the town would come out and get behind what he's trying to achieve here. And they did in vast numbers, which was really appreciated and really spurred the lads on. I mean, we've got a good group of players here anyway. And with these two coming on board as well, the fans really did come out in force and really got behind the team.
Yeah, I think 1,067 the official attendance against Hitchin. So, you know, that's great at any level of non-league football.
Yes, yeah. This is a big club. It really is. And if we can attract these fans in and get behind them, get behind the boys, this could be really a intimidating place to come. So that's what we're hoping to achieve, and long may it continue.
Swampy, I think you've got a question.
Yeah. I mean, Ian, I mean, I've been down myself on quite a few occasions when FC United came to down to Kingsland, and I know obviously the ground itself is all set up and geared for league football, and there's a lot of passionate supporters there, which is good. And obviously getting these two guys in, it's got to, first and foremost, got to help with the youthful players. I know you've got two really, really good quality full-backs with a lot of pace.
Yeah.
And you've had a lot of scouts there, haven't you, looking at them? I think you quoted in saying in September, you know, let the vultures circle, and if we can fill the ground full of scouts, that's absolutely fine, because, you know, we're playing attractive football, and the job is to further the careers of these players. But having these two guys in is going to help AU, I suppose, from a coaching perspective. And secondly, it's going to help with the blend of the team and the experience that they're going to be able to put into the club, as well as yourself, and the experience that you've had over many years. It's got to be absolutely fantastic.
Oh, it has. I mean, and they both took to it really well on Tuesday evening. They come straight into the changing room and were vocal, helping, giving advice. And for these young players here, there's nothing better than having, you know, great professionals, as they both have been, you know, to learn from, and their knowledge and the experience of what they can pass on to these young kids is great. And then we've always said that, you know, it doesn't matter what age they are, we'll give them the platform to perform in the first team, and it's just up to them. And we've got some very good kids here, and the football we're playing at the moment, and now adding the two experienced boys that we have, you know, it can only push the club forward. It really can.
Of course, and you're currently, what, fourth in the division? You know, so you're pretty aware about where you want to be at this time of the season moving forward. New players coming in, as you say, with this great experience. What are the expectations from a chairman's perspective this season, the fans' perspective, but what primarily what's your expectations this season?
Well, he'd like to obviously get promoted, but we've got to be realistic of where we finished last year. We finished 13th last year, and so we've got to make 13 places up. Where we are at the moment is where we want to be. We need to be in the mix up to Christmas, and then obviously come Christmas time and onwards, it's the league really starts then. And so if we're in the mix and around it, we can really make a really good push towards it and see where we can go. But it's got the foundations to be a really, really good club, and now we just got to keep putting our foot down on the accelerator and try and push it as forward as much as we can.
Do you find it hard, Ian, to pull the players in? Because you've got some pretty long travel in that division. I'm looking at the table. You're fourth, one level below you is Weymouth. I mean, that's not a nice trip on a Saturday or anything if you're stuck in a coach or driving yourself.
Yeah, I know. The travelling is terrible, really. It's really ludicrous, you know, some of the journeys we have to do, especially on a Tuesday, you know, these players work, and for them to come off or take a half a day, you know, they're losing money, some of them. So it's hard on them, but I mean, this is proper football. It really is. It's not the pampered stuff. It's players that are dedicated and go out their way and live and breathe it. So it's been a breath of fresh air for me. It really has, you know, to work with these players and, you know, see their commitment. And plus the volunteers that help run the football club. You know, it all goes unnoticed, but it takes a hell of a lot to run a football club, and I'd take my hat off to all non-league sides. It really is a real joy to be here.
You say that because you've had experience at pretty much every level, haven't you, of the pyramid? So do you still get that bit of ribbing that we all do if you're involved in non-league football? But, you know, people in the programme don't seem to take it seriously, but it's proper football.
Oh, it is. It is. It really is. It means a lot to the fans. They live and breathe it, and we're grateful for their support. And you know, these players really do put up with a lot. You know, they traveling home, getting home at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're up at five on the building site. Some of them. So it takes a lot of commitment from them. And it is miles away from what the Premier League is, but it's really, really exciting and enjoyable.
But a nice home game on Saturday for you. What's that? Is that the Royal Derby? Kingsling Town against Kingsland?
Yeah, it must be. I think. Yeah. We had one Tuesday night against Hitchin, which the crowd, obviously, we spoke about coming out, and now another home game against Kings Langley. So we're looking to push on again. We know it won't be easy, but again, we're hoping that the support come out and get behind the boys to try and really push them on to get a result.
Well, we wish you well on Saturday, and wish you well for the rest of the season, Ian. Thanks for coming on and talking to us.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Take care now.
Another manager there that's had experience both at the top level as a manager and also as a player, and it's great to see them putting their passions back into non-league football.
It certainly is. You know, he's played the professional game. He's played the highest level of professional game as well. And what I like to hear him say is the encouragement of they'll play any player that they think is good enough and ready. Doesn't matter what age they are, they'll play them in that team. And as I say, I know there's been a lot of scouts down watching the youngsters that they have at Kingsland. I mean, as far as the travelling is concerned, and let's not forget, a few years ago, they were in our division, the Northern Premier Division, because it actually geographically works out better for them to come north than it did to go south. And that was obviously a bind for us as individual clubs, but week in, week out, I mean, you know, the dedication that the players have and the management and the supporters is testament to them. And they're a great club, Kingsland. You know, I've been down there many times. And they are geared up and ready for bigger things. And, you know, they've had the trials and tribulations, but they've got the right man in doing the right job. They've got the backing of a chairman who has got a lot of ideas. And when he came in, I think everyone was a little bit, I'm not quite sure, but the fit seems to be working. And now he's bringing in the caliber of players that play, you know, professional football, Premier League football, to help his youngsters. So shows the dedication, shows the quality, and it shows, as you rightly said, and you said, and I always say, it's real football. It's proper football, because, you know, a lot of clubs we now know already in the semi-pro game are now full-time, so they don't have to get up at 5 in the morning and, you know, go to the building side. But these guys are doing that week in, week out, be it teachers, be it, you know, brickies, be it, you know, whatever. But they have the passion, have the love as we do, hence why we do this show week in, week out, and we go to football week in, week out, 2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah, and I guess that probably shows. He said he'd been speaking to both of the lads for, you know, a few weeks, few months or whatever. So that probably means that they've been to a few games and sort of, you know, experienced that buzz and then wanted to sign, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, I mean, what does help, and there's no question about it, their stadium will help, their ground, because it's a football, it's like a Football League ground already. So, you know, they'll go there, they'll have a look if it's the first time they've been, and they'll go, oh, this isn't too bad. They'll look at the facilities and changing rooms, and again, they'll look at that'll be a plus. Obviously, they know Ian well, also, which helps. And they'll be watching the football, they'll see the passion of the supporters, and they'll also see one thing, which is very much maligned, is the standard of football, and they'll see it's actually of a good quality. You know, I was watching Step 7, maybe Step 8 on Monday, and the quality of the football, between, you know, with about 100 people possibly watching on a Monday evening, was excellent. So the quality's there all the way through. If you get the right game, you can see great quality. And Kingsland have always played good quality football. We had one of their players, George Thompson, with us. He signed for Harrogate Town there this season, going full time with Harrogate Town. He was actually outstanding when he joined us. He was the first player that we actually paid for. But he was playing his trade down there, came to FC United of Manchester, and he's gone on to Harrogate now, at top of the Conference North. So good quality football will attract these players, and also a manager that has passion and also wants to bring youth through, so you get that good blend, and Kingsland seem to be doing that in abundance at the moment.
And we're talking here, this is Step 3 as well, so it shows the quality and depth across non-league. It's not just the National League and the National League South and North that are getting all the decent players and all the fans as well. This is non-league all the way down.
Of course it is, yeah. I mean, there's lots of very, very good football clubs out there that are in steps that they think that they should be higher and higher. They think, you know, supporters themselves will be watching a week out regardless where they've gone. We've seen league clubs, you know, that are in Conference North now. We've seen league clubs actually now that are actually even lower down the pyramid for whatever reason, you know, be it administration, clubs folding, clubs then turning into fan-owned football clubs. But wherever you look, there's quality. And that's the beautiful thing about semi-professional football, is the quality's there for all to see. And I'm sure, with non-league day last week, a lot of people that hadn't actually had a taster of semi-professional football might have gotten the bug, because, you know, we see the quality. We've seen the likes of Jamie Vardy coming from Stocksbridge Park Steels all the way through, and a host of other footballers as well, not just Jamie, but a lot of other footballers that have made it and made it into the Premier League and gone on to play for England or Ireland or whoever it may well be, all through semi-professional football, because, you know, and that's one of the beauties that we have in the UK. We have the largest semi-professional game in the world, and it allows our footballers that do drop out from all these different clubs, 16, 17 or 18, to be able to parachute down, and if they've got the right aptitude, because one of the hardest things is probably when you've been to a pro club, you know, the size of United or City or indeed Arsenal or whoever, the reality check all of a sudden is bang, you're playing step 5 on a wet, boggy pitch against a 32-year-old bricklayer who basically wants to kick you around the park. But it's a good breeding ground, and we've heard how many players have come and said, look, the best breeding ground, and Dave Anderson will tell you the same, the best breeding ground is in semi-professional football to get yourself back on track. So, you know, good entertaining football, enjoyment, quality, good managers, semi-professional football for me. I take it all day over the full-time game and the higher divisions, because we're all passionate and we're all involved some way or another. We're all available and allowed to be involved, whereas you can't the higher you go, because obviously the players are treated like thoroughbreds, and you don't have that connection. We still have that connection, luckily, even going up to the National League, you can still have that, and hopefully, you know, if you carry on, we'll be able to do for a long, long time to come.
Well, one man that certainly knows about the quality and the passion and the excitement of being involved in non-league is our next guest. Now, we mentioned last week of the arrival back in non-league of our next guest, or back in non-league in a big role. With many comings and goings, he's been linked with various jobs this season, but his new role at Solihull Moors is one that intrigues us all. Good afternoon, Richard Money, new boss at Solihull Moors.
Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
So you've joined Solihull, but why? I mean, it's a club in transition. If you want to get back involved, it's maybe not the first choice of many that want to just enjoy their football.
Look, I think people have to understand that throughout your career, you go through different stages and different things are important in your life. And, you know, you reach a stage, the age I am and the career that I've had, where there are other things that are important than just the football club and football in general. And by that I mean family and location. And this particular job allows me to meet the balance that I've been searching for at this stage of my life and my career.
You talk about your career. I mean, really, you know, we probably need an hour just to talk about, you know, your playing career and also your management career. So all that experience, what's the most important asset, do you think, you know, coming to a club? What are you now, Solihull Moors, 8 points from 15 games, you know?
Yeah.
What is it, that thing that you want to use from your past now to make the difference at Solihull?
Well, I've worked in this league before. I've been fortunate enough to have clubs that are considered ex-league clubs and have that type of structure in both Cambridge and Luton. You know, there's no doubt that I've joined what is really a non-league club here with Solihull Moors. They have a non-league mentality, and by that, without being disrespectful, I think I would normally go into a club and look at areas that I could make small gains. I think in this particular instance, there are some areas that I would expect to be just the norm that I think we can put in place where we can make some significant gains to help both performance and fitness. So, you know, that's a really big challenge here. They want to be full-time at some stage in the future. They want to be a club that's considered, can challenge to be a league club at some stage in the future, next 5-10 years. I think the city can withstand another league club. No doubt, it's a big borough, it's a big catchment area. So, as I've said, there is potential here and there is ambition here. But in the short term, it's to give them a mentality and an outlook that's a little bit more full-time and professional without being full-time at the current moment.
Swampy, I think you've got a question.
Yeah, good afternoon to you, Richard. Looking at your career and obviously all the teams that you play for and equally the teams that you've managed, it's been a distinguished career, not only in the front line, as a manager, but you've done a lot of coaching roles. You've been a head of football, so the experience that you've brought into Solihull will be invaluable. But this weekend, you've got an opportunity to perhaps have a little bit more relaxation because you've got FA Cup action, and you've got a team in Ossett who obviously a number of divisions below you. Does that help really this week, so that you can let the players go out and express themselves and give them an opportunity to show you what they're capable of? Because obviously the defeats of Hartlepool in midweek obviously is a quick learning curve for you and a learning curve for the players. But so does this FA Cup game help you or does it hinder you?
No, look, I think we had a Birmingham Senior Cup game on Tuesday night, which meant that I could play everybody that I haven't seen yet. So over the course of the two games, everyone is fit has started. This weekend, we'll obviously pick what I think is the best team at the minute, the best 11. And it's an important game for the club, You know, there's a financial reward to getting through, which can help us. But, you know, the fact that it's not a league game and gives me 2 weeks between Hartlepool and Guiseley is obviously a help, because it means I can see more of the players without league points being, you know, being at stake.
And for those that don't know, I mean, Swampy's sort of mentioned that you've been involved behind the scenes. You know, what have you been doing recently since you were, you know, sort of dropped out of non-league? Where have you been picking up that additional experience, Richard?
Well, I took Cambridge into the Football League, obviously, first of all, you know, and obviously we were able to take them to Old Trafford to play in the FA Cup fourth round replay, having drawn at home, and able to make them financially stable for the future. When I left Cambridge, I went to America for 12 months and set up Atlanta United's Academy, the new MLS club. They're going to be a big club, probably the biggest in the MLS. So we set up their academy from scratch. Then I got asked to go back to Norwich as academy manager and, you know, have a look at their program. And I left there in June. And now I'm here back in the Midlands, where the family want to be, where everyone wants to sell. And looking forward to the challenge with some good people.
And Richard, just while you just said that, I mean, it's interesting. Is this a long term project for you? I know a lot of managers with the kind of experience that you've got, and have been at a lot of other football clubs and have done very, very well. There's always one club that they seem to want to settle at and maybe create a bit of a legacy. Is this your club? Obviously, if your family are moving into the area, you're going to be able to, you know, settle where you want to settle. Is that a reason and one of the reasons for coming to Solihull?
Well, look, we all know that this is a results business, and you know, we're in a situation where we need some results, and any manager needs results. I don't really look at it that way, if I'm honest. I think I left a legacy at Cambridge, you know, and at other clubs in my past. I'm 62. I'm not sure how long I want to carry on working. It may be short term, it may be long term, but whatever happens, you know, I think people who know me will know that I'll come and give everything I've got to give to try and get this club out of trouble in what are very difficult circumstances. And then, you know, if we can do that and we can remain a National League club at the end of the season, then let's see what happens, you know. But, you know, I think right now we should focus on just trying to win a few games and compete to get out of that bottom four, because, you know, it's not going to be easy. There are 5 or 6 clubs involved at the minute, who none of whom can seem to be able to win enough games to escape the trap. The gap between 6th bottom and 7th bottom is probably 4 or 5 points. It looks a big distance at the minute, and it probably is, but we've got to try and, first of all, get ourselves to the top of that bottom 6 and then try and claw 1 or 2 in, if that's possible. So, you know, it's very much short term. Let's try and win the FA Cup tie on Saturday and then focus on trying to get 3 points at Guiseley. And if we don't, then we focus on trying to get 3 points at Eastleigh. And it's pretty much as simple as that, really, right now.
Well, yeah, it does look like it's going to be a long season for you. But, I mean, if anybody can do it, it certainly sounds like you can, Richard. And it's been fantastic talking to you again. And we will talk again before the end of the season. Hopefully, it'll be celebrating some more success for you. But thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Swampy, again, talking about, you know, people with some great experience, you know, Richard Money there, you don't get really many CVs better than his, do you, in non-league?
And I'm quite envious, I mean, because I think any football supporter would love someone with a quality. You know, he started his career at, you know, Scunthorpe, played for Liverpool, you know, Luton, obviously Portsmouth, Scunthorpe again, he finished his career at, managed them as well as caretaker, went international, European, did really, really, really well there, went out to Australia, you know, and then he's been an academy scout manager here, he's been head football director there, he's been at Newcastle United, he's been at Walsall, Luton, he obviously got Cambridge promoted, did really, really well, and now he's at Solihull Moor. The man's got so much experience, it's a pity actually we can't split him, you know, into about 30 Richard Moneys and actually divide him around non-league football, because the experience he's got for one club is far too much. They're a bit greedy as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, he did mention, you know, the position he left Cambridge's, and you also, you know, yeah, maybe it's his time at Luton wasn't as fantastic as everybody hoped it was going to be, you know, as a former player and that sort of thing. But again, he put those cornerstones down to get them back in the football league. And it does look that, you know, although he's had a fair few clubs during his time, he does seem to change things behind the scenes in order to, even once he's left, the club are in a much better position. And that's not always the case with managers, is it? Particularly in non-league.
No, you're dead right. A lot of clubs are left in a worse off position. Obviously, you know, when he was at Walsall in the Football League, he got them promoted. Luton Town, there in the Football League. Now you've got Cambridge Football League and, you know, a steady Football League team. So he's laid them foundations, and it's interesting. Obviously, one of the managers he's going to come up against in the next several months is Marcus Bignot, who's at Chester in a similar situation, who was the Solihull manager, who went obviously over to manage Hartlepool. Was it Hartlepool, I think he managed? Yeah. And, you know, he was talking about, you know, backroom, how things work, and you've got to get things in place in order to progress if you want to get into the Football League. There's no question Richie's going to come in and he's going to see everything. As he rightly says, they're a semi-pro club. He's been fortunate enough to be with league clubs that have been put down into the into semi-pro football, so he's been able to work on a full-time basis. He's been able to work with a structure that he can tweak and make it his own and leave him in a better situation. This, he's going to start from pretty much scratch with the professionalism that he's got, with the quality he wants to bring in, and he's going to have to do it on a part-time basis. And a part-time basis for any of the clubs at this moment in time that are in the National League or the National League North or South, it can be a struggle. But if anyone can get them out of it, he's the man. It'll be interesting to see how himself and Chester do with Marcus Bignot, because they've both got what I think similar attributes in the way they approach everything from the backroom staff going out onto the football pitch. Well, that'd be quite an interesting thing to look at over the season, I would have thought.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, Richard there was, you know, very honest. I think that there's a lot of things that need changing at Solihull, whereas I think Marcus was, you know, he was suggesting that he already had, you know, quite a decent backroom staff, and he was able to, you know, hopefully corral them into helping the club come up. So, you know, it's maybe a slightly bigger task for Richard, and you know, hopefully the fans will get behind him, because, you know, he's maybe not always the one that embraces the fans in the same way that other managers might. But boy, does he get results.
Well, it's. You know, the managers there not to be necessarily liked, but be respected. Any manager, if he's respected, doesn't have to be liked, in all fairness. And if he gets some results and he gets them out of the situation they're in, they will respect him. He won't be bothered about being liked as a manager. His job is there to go in there. His managerial expertise is on the line, because he's gone to a club that, you know, are in a very, very poor, precarious position at this moment in time. But he'll have the backing of the board, the backing of the chairman at the club. They've got a little bit of money at Solihull. They've got a project to move forward over the next 3 or 4 years. So for him, he'll be just thinking about the job in hand, what he needs to do. And it is interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, we're both in the semi-pro game, and it takes, let's say, perhaps somebody who's been in the professional game for a long, long time to come in and identify how you can improve things quite quickly with that professional eye. And I think a lot of football clubs would certainly benefit from, you know, a little bit of help from, let's say, Premier League football clubs or league football clubs. They can come along to your club and see, right, you know, let's have a look at your structure and help them out. Because, you know, Richard's obviously identified there's a structure that needs to be put in place that perhaps other managers from the semi-pro game won't have seen. And if we can get, you know, football helping football, it can only benefit and improve our game going forward. But Richard Money, as I say, he's done pretty much everything from a player perspective, and also, you know, from a managerial perspective. And it won't surprise me at all if him and his team are successful this season, and it could become a long term love affair for him, or as he says himself, could be very short term, and he could be out the door depending how results go. But FA Cup for him this weekend against I think it's Ossett Town, isn't it? Or is it Ossett Albion? I always forget. On paper, that's the game that they should easily win, but it's the FA Cup, and we know how difficult it is in the FA Cup for the bigger teams. But he'll be looking forward to that. Then he says you've got 2 weeks to prepare for Geisley, who are again in the same situation. So, you know, it's going to be interesting times there at Solihull, but very good luck to him and the team, because, you know, they were only promoted. This is the second season in National League. They were the champions a couple of seasons ago, although we were, I think, the only team to beat them at home. At their place, 1-0 on a Tuesday night, while the aeroplanes were landing opposite the ground. So it should be interesting, that's all I can say.
Well, let's on the FA Cup there, yeah, Solihull Moors against Ossett Town on the weekend, because it is the FA Cup fourth qualifying round. So earlier on, I was able to grab a few words with Phil Ennetts at FA Cup Fact File, who filled us in with a few stats ahead of the weekend.
Yes, Tim. Yes, this is definitely the big qualifying round for all the clubs who've taken part and managed to make it this far. One step away from potentially meeting a Football League club, potentially getting on TV, great exposure, and obviously wonderful in terms of financial reward.
And quite a lot of National League against National League matches there, which obviously gives some of the smaller clubs an even better chance of getting through to the first round proper and making a name for themselves.
There's a heck of a lot of National League sides going to be knocking each other out. So there's about, I think, 22 National League clubs will be facing each other. So that'll be a loss to 22 National League teams in the first round. But yeah, the big ties are the National League clubs facing lower league opposition. That's quite interesting. The South Shields v Hartlepool one, yeah, that really stands out. South Shields have already beaten Darlington and York City, so they'll be on the up for taking on Hartlepool. But the biggest gap actually is Geisley taking on Shildon of the Northern League. Shildon being the last Step 5 club still standing, will be taking part in their sixth FA Cup tie this season, which is the same number that the eventual winners will take part in. So that looks like a fantastic potential for a cup upset.
Just a shame then that South Shields could get the same amount of prize money as the eventual winners of the FA Cup for winning so many games.
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about the fair sharing of the funding from the FA about FA Cup rounds. They really need to look at that and see how they can generate increased revenues for the teams that take part in the qualifying rounds.
Well, what about yourself, Phil? We know you had a poll last time on Twitter to choose the game that you're going to. Where are you heading to this weekend?
I quite like the look of the fact that there's a couple of ties involving two Step 4 clubs, which guarantees a Step 4 club into the first round proper. And I think, on paper, Haringey Borough versus Haybeach Swifts actually is a tie that I find most attractive, not least because Haybeach are the top scorers in the competition this season, scoring 17 goals already, and they themselves would equal their best run if they won, whilst Haringey are one of 9 teams who would make it into the first round for the first time ever. So it's got a lot riding on it, and also result in one of the lower level teams still riding in the FA Cup.
So a big weekend for non-league then for all those involved, which rolls into next week as well. I believe the draw on Monday evening.
Yeah, Monday the BBC are airing it on BBC Two from 7 o'clock. Probably draw will take place about 7:15. So it's good that again the exposure for the draw. It was done on Talksport on the radio for the fourth qualifying round. So I think it's good, again, for exposure for these lower league clubs that do make it through. And even if you only manage to get a draw on Saturday, then you still could be in the hat on Monday and potentially you'd be drawn at home against a League 1 or League 2 team.
And reaching that first round proper is something that everybody remembers about their local non-league club, isn't it?
Yeah, and some clubs will obviously be saying they've never been there before, and one in particular that stands out is Truro City, who are looking to try and make it to the first round for the first time. They first played in the FA Cup back in 1924, and so they've had to wait a long time to give themselves a chance to be knocking on the door of the first round. And if they did make it on Saturday, they would become only the second club from Cornwall ever to make it into the first round of the FA Cup. So there could be some history there, and potentially even a home draw would get them a TV showing and showing live football out of Cornwall for the first time.
And we all love your FA Cup stats, Phil. One that I spotted on your Twitter timeline this week was about Shore Lane Association.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Shore Lane, until this season, they'd never actually won an FA Cup game. Obviously, they'd not played in it for that long, but they'd never actually won a game before this year. But now that they're into the fourth quarterfinal, and they've actually won more games than they've actually lost. So they're in a very strong position. And again, another team obviously looking to make the first round for the first time ever.
And those stats again, Phil, you've shown the true depth of non-league and the teams competing this weekend. I believe four of those competing have previously been in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup competition.
Yeah, it's quite interesting to see clubs who have, and not long ago either. So, you know, we've got Tranmere Rovers who've played in the quarterfinals in the 21st century, as have Wrexham. We've also got Maidenhead United, who obviously played in the quarterfinals back in the 19th century, so it'll be good for them to continue their cup run. And then you've got Leyton Orient, who are appearing in this round for the first time in about 90 years, who made it all the way through to a semi-final, actually, in 1978, where I think they lost to Arsenal in that semi-final. So, yeah, four teams there who've experienced the FA Cup at a much later stage of the competition than the fourth quarterfinal round.
Well, thanks once again, Phil. Fantastic stuff. And people can, of course, follow all your stats, all your previews and everything via Twitter at FA Cup Fact File. There's a link to Phil's WordPress site there as well, where he's got even more in-depth analysis of everything that's going on in the FA Cup this season. Thanks, Phil. Have a great weekend and speak to you soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tim. Guest talk to you. Good luck to all 32 teams taking part.
So Phil is always our FA Cup stats man, and one of the games that you did mention there was obviously South Shields, who have a massive game against Hartlepool United. Well, I say massive, I mean they've already beaten Darlington and York City. I mean, you know, what comes next? Well, Hartlepool United, a game that I believe sold out as an all-ticket affair, sold out within 3 hours. And maybe one man that's as excited as any about this game coming up at the weekend is our next guest on the line, Barry Smith, midfielder with South Shields. Good afternoon, Barry.
Good afternoon.
Now, I'd say it's a big game. I mean, you're used to Wembley and cup wins. Is this how does this compare with the FA Vars?
Yeah, well, it's a different competition. So obviously the FA Vars is a special moment, but the FA Cup is definitely more special, and we'll want to obviously do really well in it. And we'll look forward to playing against Hartlepool on Saturday, who are a very, very good team. But obviously the way we're playing and that way, we're pretty confident.
It's not a bad run you've been on, well, in recent years, is it?
It's a great run. I mean, I think we've lost two in the last 50-plus games. And obviously that just obviously speaks volumes of where the club is pushing to be, along with beating the likes of Dalton and in York in the last two games.
First of all, good afternoon to you, Barry. I predicted that that you'd win the last two FA Cup games. I've seen you plenty of times. I saw you against FC United in a pre-season friendly, and my family actually live in South Shields, so I've been up quite a few times. It's no surprise to me where you are. It's no surprise to me as a football club where you're going to. But you will have to do one thing, Barry. In order to actually really emulate South Shields of 1925-26, you're going to have to go to the fifth round of the FA Cup, my friend. Because I didn't realise what an absolutely fantastic record you've got as a football club, going back from 1920 to 28 when you were in the second division. You were the fifth round twice. First round, second round, third round, and third round. But you're confident, I take it, against Hartlepool going in to get to the first round proper?
Yeah, I mean, we've got to be confident because of obviously the run and obviously the squad of players and the management that we've got. We know Hartlepool is going to be a very, very tough test for us. But us as a team, we'll always stick together and we'll work really hard to try and get the result that we want for that game.
And you've got 305 appearances at the football club in total. You've been there, you've been a stalwart for the football club, even through when you had that injury situation. The club stuck with you, you stuck with them. you obviously then moved to another ground for a couple of seasons. You've come back, and I mean, South Shields is buzzing with the great atmosphere. I was at Wembley to watch you lift the vase, and you've now taken part of the trophy. You won against Scarborough 5-2. I mean, do you fancy the trophy this season? Are you going to go all the way in the trophy in second, third, fourth, fifth round, perhaps in the FA Cup, and win the league?
Well, obviously, me and Ian is on the league, and obviously we'll just take each cup competition as it comes. But it's in both cup way, in every cup that we're playing. But obviously the trophy in every cup, we want to try and get as far as we can. We'll obviously know that it's going to be, we're going to have some really tough tests along the way, and obviously we'll just take it game by game.
Fantastic. And I mean, you're going to have the opportunity, you play alongside him week in, week out, but for the listeners, just tell her what it's like to play alongside, you know, Julia Archer. You know, it's got to be something special, hasn't it? Or in fact, for him, special playing again with someone like yourself, because you've played a lot more games than him.
Yeah, I mean, Julia was obviously a top professional back when he was playing, and obviously he's an absolute great lad. And me to think, what, 3-4 years ago when I was down at Peterlee with a club, to now lining up beside the likes of Julio and John Shaw, Craig Baxter, and that, who's obviously played at very, very good levels, is an absolute privilege.
Fantastic.
You've had all those games there, Barry, but have you ever come up against opposition like Hartlepool? Your step four, Hartlepool step one. You know, is it ever, other than pre-season friendlies, is this the biggest gap for a competitive match that you've played in?
Yeah, obviously, I think it was 3-4 years ago. I had lined up for Leighton Orient in a friendly against Gated, but obviously that was just a pre-season friendly. So obviously to be involved in a cup competition like the FA Cup, is in a proper game. This is obviously the biggest game that I've ever been involved in.
So do you prepare differently? I know you've been doing your usual stuff and sort of organising the kids' coaching just before you come on to speak to us. You know, is your week different this week, or is it just mindset, get through to Saturday and then pull the kit on and play the best you can?
No, the lads have all obviously been wine. Obviously done a session on Tuesday. And obviously just prepare them. We've got training tonight, which will be a good training session. We'll get prepared properly for Saturday. We'll go through the ins and outs of their strengths and weaknesses, and we'll do a bit about the way that we're going to play in training. And we'll look forward to a great cup tie on Saturday, and obviously we'll welcome Hartlepool to Mariners Park.
Well, we look forward to hearing about their headlines as well. No disrespect to Hartlepool, but it would be a fantastic story if you could get through to the first round proper. And who knows who you might draw. But we wish you well for the weekend, and also wish you well for the rest of the season. Thanks for talking to us, Barry.
Yeah, that's lovely. Thank you very much.
Swampy, I mean, the South Shield story, it is a fantastic one, isn't it? It's proper non-league legends being created there.
It is, yeah, but as I say, I mean, I wasn't, you know, aware of the real steep history, because they are an ex-league football club. They're in the second division with Tottenham Hotspurs. You know, they finished sixth in the Football League in 1921-22, the highest position the football club ever finished. Bradford Park Avenue, another semi-pro club now, they were in the same divisions as them. So there's loads of history. There's trials and tribulations. They lost the ground. They disappeared for a number of years. They've come back. And I've got to say, I mean, I think we talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I said, I honestly don't believe that York will beat them. I don't think Darlington will beat them, because I've seen them, and they're only in the division that they're in because of, basically, you have to go through the pyramid. For me, they could quite easily walk into National League North, or maybe even National League, and ply their trade. They've been beaten once this season away to it was a small town in Wales, and I'm trying to think the name of it now, but it'll come to me in a minute. And they were beaten away there, I think, resoundingly beaten as well, Colwyn Bay, and since then they've not been defeated, and they're learning. They've got a lot of travelling to do, but what a story. Great club. They play some superb football as well. We all saw that at Wembley, didn't we, when they played Cleethorpes, and they were outstanding. The pace, the quality, Julia Archer in there. Again, you know, the only downside, I suppose, I mean, as being a Jarrah Roofing fan, is that we're watching a club basically literally round the corner from us doing brilliantly well. And Jarrah, we had the manager on, we were talking about real nitty-gritty people that are involved in non-league football, and he's around the corner and he's still, you know, doing mending the fences and cutting the grass, and the South Shields are going from strength to strength to strength. But, you know, good luck to them. It's good for the town, it's good for the people of the area. And the one thing they've done as well, which is magnificent, it's Newcastle and Sunderland fans watching them. You know, so that they've become a club that everyone wants to watch South Shields. So it doesn't matter, you know, those tribal rivalries between the Black and Whites, the Magpies and the Black Cats have basically disappeared when it comes to South Shields, and they've sold out, as you say. And they're going to be a real team of the future if they can keep this momentum going, which I clearly believe they will be able to do so. They've got an ex-Football League, Premier League manager, player who's a manager now. So really good times for them. And Barry, I'm sure he's a little bit more excited than he sounded, and he just takes everything in his stride, it seems. But I'm excited on his behalf. I'm excited for the town. And I'm going to predict again, and no disrespect to Hartlepool, I think they'll beat Hartlepool on Saturday, and they'll have a good cup run.
You say about Barry. I mean, Barry is proper through and through South Shields. I know when I've spoken to him before. He's pretty much there all day, and as you say, he was there earlier. He was doing bits and pieces around the club, and then he's been training the kids in the post school soccer coaching, and then he's sticking around for training. You know, he won't be catching up with any of this, you know, trivial telly that us Southern boys look. We spoke about it before, that northeast hotbed of football. I mean, the quality, the standard, the depth, and also, as you say, the fans, the supporters, something that, you know, Southern clubs should maybe look at. It'd be interesting to see some stats, actually, to see the percentage of population that go and watch football on a Saturday afternoon. It must be, you know, through the roof in the northeast area compared to you know, certainly in the London area, where you know, all clubs are competing for crowds. But you know, that it's in the blood in the northeast, isn't it?
And it is definitely. And the one thing to remember is the amount of professional footballers that have come from the northeast. I mean, there's you know, I'm talking from the 60s 70s, there's, you know, the old Manchester United team, without the help of the people of the northeast after the Munich air disaster, you know, half the team from the northeast, there were semi-professional footballers that came from Blyth and other clubs. You know, it's a hotbed. And the thing is, you can go anywhere in Newcastle, Sunderland, Hartlepool, any part of that sort of like the north, that part of the country, Spennymoor, Blyth, you know, and they just want to sit in the pub and talk football and football and football. And they know the football as well. They're not just blind to it, and the crowds are decent. They're out there week in, week out. And what is nice to see is that the Northern League, which has been a very, very good quality league over the years, the teams are now eventually coming out of the Northern League and plan the trade in the northwest counties, or indeed in the Northern Premier Division, the Evo State Northern Prem, and they're showing the qualities. And you know, Spennymoor, look at them at the moment; they're fourth or fifth in the National League North. No surprise to me. I watched them last season on many occasions when they came down to the northwest of England, playing in the Northern Prem. Great quality team, and they all seem to play. We've seen Blyth, the story of Blyth, for how many seasons now? But yeah, I think other supporters, I think other clubs could take a leaf out of the books from the North East, because you know, they seem to be doing something right. Whether there's something in the air of the North East, because you've got the Northumberland coast, and you've got a whole host of different things going on up there. But it's a hotbed, and as you say, they don't have as many clubs, pro clubs, as you say, to have them distracted. Obviously, there is quite a number of pro clubs up there, but not considering like the same as perhaps certainly London, and indeed even in the Greater Manchester area, there's the plethora of semi-professional clubs that are at a high level, plus all the professional clubs. But still, you know, they produce quality footballers week in, month in, month out, year in, year out, and it wouldn't surprise me if again a northeast team goes and wins the Vars. A North East club is very, very near to the trophy this season.
maybe they're lucky to have all those proper football clubs at non-league level up in the northeast. And I'm sure there'll be maybe a little bit of debate on Twitter, because I believe, and I'm not pulling you up on this, Swampy, I'm just trying to protect you, that the original South Shields club became Gateshead FC in 1930. So I'm sure some of our listeners will tell us the exact situation there. So I don't know if they're the same.
That's
South
absolutely
Shields,
fine.
Right? But that, you know, that's the wonders of non-league, is that there'll be plenty of fans that will know and be able to tell us. But it still means that the football in the northeast has been strong. Well, for centuries, really. That's the FA Cup. Fourth qualifying round this weekend, with the draw taking place on Monday. So lots of excited fans and supporters, very very much excited chairman, I would have thought, on Saturday evening if they're named in the hat for Monday's draw. But moving on, and a final story of the week. We all love a comeback, particularly in non-league. And imagine if you had a long 150-mile trip down the M4 on a Tuesday night. Might have even been longer than 150 miles. We'll find out in a minute. But then you find your side a 3-0 down. Is it time to give up and get ready for Saturday? Apparently not. Neil Baker and his Slough Town side, who had a pretty decent trip back from Merthyr Town in the week.
Good afternoon, Neil. I wonder if you can tell us a bit more about this game. Did you end up winning?
Yeah, so it was actually 4-0. So we were 4-0 down within 18 minutes away at Merthyr. And yeah, pretty close to 150 miles. I think it's a 3-hour journey. Down there on a Tuesday night. So we were sort of poor defensively, made quite a few errors, and but we'd still played relatively well in the first half and found ourselves 4-0 down. Most sides you'd just sit there and think, well, the game's done, and to be honest, we did. You know, we went in at half time and said, well, look, you know, you've got to go and show a bit about yourself now and try and at least win the second half and show a bit of character, because the last thing we wanted before an FA Cup game Saturday was to get a 6 or 7-0 defeat. But you know, I didn't expect them to win the second half 5-0, and we ended up winning the game 5-4 with a 93rd minute winner, which was the last kick of the game. We'd equalised in the 90th minute as well, so unbelievable scenes. I've been involved in football a long time, never been involved in anything like that. And I was looking through the old scores and things like that, and the closest I could find was when Arsenal were 4-0 up against Newcastle, and I think Newcastle come back to win, to draw 4-4. But yeah, it's an unbelievable achievement from the lads, and a fantastic evening.
And it certainly makes that journey on the way home from Merthyr a lot easier, doesn't it? Was some singing rather than the car?
Yeah, there was. There was. Funnily enough, we have a guy who does the radio for us, and he does what's called Rebels Radio, and we actually listened to the sort of last 5-10 minutes on the loudspeaker, and it's absolutely hilarious. It's the guy goes absolutely nuts and crazy, and so we listened to that a little bit, had a few cheers, and then I think the realization probably was starting to kick in that lads probably had to be up for work in 5 or 6 hours, so it was a little bit quieter. If it was a Saturday, I expect there would have been a few beers on the coach. But no, it wasn't too boozy on the way home. So, but you know, myself and John, you know, I know I was completely wired when I got in. It was just an unbelievable experience, and you know, something I probably never experience again.
And as for commentators that go mad and make lots of noise, Swampy, I think you got a question.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can imagine what it was like. I commentated on a game for FC United a few years ago, and we ended up 5-0. We never won the game, but we came back and dead and buried, and that was one of those moments where commentary goes out the window, and you're a supporter again, and you just scream and shout with everybody else. But as you say, the come down's always a difficult one. But for me, the question is, you're 4-0 down at half time, you've gone in there, whatever you said obviously has worked. Do you need a team talk for this Saturday's FA Cup game, or has everything been said that needs to be said?
To be honest, we were relatively calm in the change room at half time, because although we were 4-0 down, we hadn't actually played that badly. So it's nothing we said or did that turned it around. It's the 13-14 lads that ended up playing the second half. They were the ones that did it. In terms of Saturday, I don't think you need much of a team talk. You know, FA Cup fourth qualifying round with a chance to be in the first round proper. I mean, I think the team talk does itself. So you know, we'll be getting the lads up for it, and hopefully they can sort of, you know, feed off what happened on Tuesday night and put in a good performance against Folkestone.
And that would be a good comparison of the Southern League and the Ryman League, standards and the different sort of players that. That you experience it. It's often a debate, I know, between managers about the different sorts of players that you need to pull in. But you've really brought together a team and sort of gelled them together. You've quite a hard core of players over the last couple of seasons have stuck together. And you think that's sort of part of your success?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, we've been slowly putting the side together for a few years, and the last sort of 2 years. It's been pretty consistent. We bought in five in the summer, of which three actually came from the Ryman Bostic League, and they've come in and gelled perfectly. So, you know, yeah, I think everyone talks about what's the difference between the Bostic and the Southern. And I think if you're in the Southern, you say the Southern's stronger, and if you're in the Bostic, you say the Bostic's stronger. So, it's very difficult. It's 11 men versus 11 men. I think we've played Dulwich, who obviously, flying in that league, and we beat them in the second qualifying round. So, you know, with a bit of luck, we can make it 2 out of 2 against the Bostic teams.
Yeah, going back to the league, we spoke to Ian Colehouse at Kingsling Town earlier, talking about the strength of that top of the table, the division you're in. Reading the table as it stands at the moment, you've got Kettering, yourselves, Hereford, Kings Lynn, Weymouth, Redditch. They're all big names in non-league football. You are step three.
I think that's a good point. That top five in particular, I think all five have sort of been playing at a higher level before. I think four of those have played in the Conference National. It's a tough. I mean, Hereford are obviously a massive club. Same with Kettering. Ourselves moving back into Slough has sort of been the making of the club again, really. It's another club that you can now class as a relatively big club at step three, and Kings Lynn, I think they had over 1,000 there on a Tuesday night this week. So it is a tough league. It's one that's very, very difficult to get out of. We got in the playoffs last year, but probably fell a little bit short. And, we'll look to try and do one better this year. But as you say, with some of those sides in it, you can't sort of guarantee anything. And you just got to try and keep grinding out the wins.
And you mentioned John Underwood. The two of you are joint managers, and you tend to be the one that talks more. Are you good cop, bad cop? Is that the way that you guys?
we're both good cop and both bad cop at times. We've been working together now as managers. This is our seventh season together. We've played together at Farnborough. When I was 17, we've been best mates since then. It just works. It always has done. We don't disagree on anything. It's strange. I'm sure people sit there and have their reservations about joint managers. But in our situation, it works. And as I say, sometimes he's good cop and I'm bad cop, and other times vice versa. It just depends how we feel. But we try and make the place as fun as possible and as professional as possible. And hopefully that will do the job.
Well, it certainly seems to be doing the job at the moment. And we wish you well at the weekend, Neil, and we'll keep an eye out for the rest of the season as well, because that is a very competitive division, that Evo-Stick South Premier. So thank you again for joining us, and good luck.
Thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
Swampy, another manager that has based his success on experience, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've heard today is managers with experience but managers with passion. They talk well. They come across well. They come across with enthusiasm for the game, regardless whether they play for Liverpool and they've won leagues with Cambridge or Luton. There's passion in everything they do, and that's why they're still involved in sport and in football primarily. Age 62, as Richard was saying, or you're a younger up and coming manager. So those managers that at this moment in time are having a hard time, those managers that might lose their jobs in the next, you know, few weeks or months, coming months, could always look to the experience that they've gained, and and you know, you keep on working and keep on motivating yourself and motivating others, and that's a great story. You know, two best mates, you know, not having a cross word really for the last 7 years, agreeing with pretty much on everything within the structure of their football club and the way they've got them playing, that's fantastic. I mean, I have an argument with myself most of the time, and you know, I don't often come out the winner of that. For those two to be you know, so successful at what they're doing, and may long continue. But it's all about experience, as you say, and passion, and learning from you know, the good times and the bad times. He was very humble in the fact that he said, well, we didn't say a great deal at you know, half time 4-0 down after 18 minutes going at half time 4-0 down. You know, we just went out there and we played our game, and amazing comeback to win 5-4. It was all over Twitter sphere and all over the league websites. I noticed during the week as well. So, you know, it's a good story, and it's a story that supporters of either team that are there watching that game would have known it was a top quality game of football to enjoy as well, with some very, very poor defending, obviously.
Yeah, so that's one when, if you're doing the video for that one, you don't really fancy doing the highlights, do you? Because there's a lot of editing to do there.
A lot of editing to do as well, you're right, Tim. But just before we go, Tim, the one thing I wanted to just mention was, you know, you said obviously, and I still may well be corrected, but looking at Sal Shields, as we were talking maybe in the Twitter sphere, someone will be able to tell us, but looking at the North Eastern League in 1938-39, Sal Shields won the league with 60 points, and Gateshead Reserves were sixth. If you then go to 1957-58, South Shields won the North Eastern League, and Gateshead Reserves were there. And in 68-69, when the Northern Premier League started, South Shields finished fifth, and Gateshead were 11th. So I'm sure someone's going to come along and tell us exactly what's what there. But South Shields seems to have been around for a number of years. As the guys of South Shields, I think they first started off as South Shields Athletic, I think it was, but I wouldn't mind being corrected. It's still a great story. You know, South Shields, North Shields, Jarrah Roofing, Blythe Spartans, you know, Concert, Betty Moore, they're all there, they're all in there. But anyway, that's just my little, even Hexham.
You just started sounding like a Norwegian commentator there, just spouting off, yeah. Northeastern
That's why I thought I better stop. And let's be honest, it's not far from Norway either. You can get the ferry across, and you're there in half an hour.
Well, maybe that's what we should try and do. Let's find a Norwegian South Shield supporter. You know, if there's any around, get in touch via Twitter at Non-League Show. Well, that is it for this week. Thanks to Swampy, all our guests, and everybody for listening. Find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, also on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. And if you want to put our podcast on your own website, check out www.nonleaguefootballshow.com, where you can grab our embeddable player for free. Thanks once again. Goodbye.
BABA.